Good morning, all, and
good morning.
Merry Christmas to you. And a little early, I hope you have a very, very happy New Year. I know what it says in the bulletin about the scripture, but I want to back up a little bit and go into some earlier verses of Ecclesiastes, because I think it's important to set this thing up. The speaker in Ecclesiastes is the teacher, the son of David. And I think the interesting thing about it is the teacher says that everything is meaningless. Wisdom is meaningless. And then he says pleasure is meaningless. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good, but also prove to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine, embracing folly. My mind still guided me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of our lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted trees of all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs of water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I owned more flocks and herds than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and harems as well. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed. Then the teacher says, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. So I say again, good morning and Merry Christmas. And for those of you who still debate who won the Revolutionary War, happy Boxing Days. Boxing Days, as you remember, was originally intended as a day for us to give to the poor. I think that's still a good idea. Maybe we should put it back into practice. When I sat down to write my comments for this morning, I knew that I had two choices, two directions I could go in. First, I could do sort of a year in review kind of a thing, you know, or I could spend the time that I have with you thinking about the year ahead and specifically how you and I might think about approaching it. Wisely, I hope. We'll see in a few minutes. I chose to talk about the coming year because I'm firmly convinced that there will be enough years in review on cable TV to satisfy all of our needs. My first topic is the idea of taking things in small bites. And my second idea is celebrating and, in foodie terms, savoring small pleasures and small rewards. I'm sure that at holiday tables all across America and perhaps around the world, parents or grandparents or aunts and uncles took the time to tell little John and little Jane, take small bites, please. Children do tend to pack their mouths filling every nook and cranny with their favorite food. And I can remember distinctly among our own children, filling their little tiny mouths with glorious cake, with as much as they could, as quickly as they could. I remember Brandon, it was a marvelous study in human nature, just gathering, putting it in as much as he could take. In reality, it was a sea of joy and delight. Excuse me, I misspoke. It was an island of sea and delight in a sea of cake crumbs. And I remember my silent prayer after every one of these occasions. Please, God, don't let them sneeze with their mouths full. Now, from a technical or a biological point of view, we all know that small bites are more easily digested than big bites. And there's always the danger of choking. We're always, as parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles, we're always very much aware of whether the kids are going to choke. And there's also the fact, let's face it, if you take small bites, there's a greater likelihood that you're going to be able to taste what you're eating. I guess the whole idea of delayed gratification fits into this. I remember the experiment with little kids were given the choice of, you can have a piece of candy now, or if you wait for 10 minutes, you can have two choices, two pieces of candy. Well, theoretically and practically speaking, most of the kids decided they'd take the one piece. Delayed gratification. They forgave the second piece. Now, I hope in sincerity that no one asked me to take this test. The whole idea of delayed gratification is certainly not limited to the young. As learned and civilized adults, we often make the same choice. We'll take the one piece of candy now. We often ignore the wisdom of breaking down and reducing tasks, or oatmeal raisin cookies in my case, into small, manageable, digestible bites. And I, for one, too often end up biting off more than I can chew. I have in the past, and I probably will in the future, accept without reservation commitments that for one reason or another are simply too difficult, too complex, or are just beyond my available time, treasure, and talent for me to accomplish within the time frames that someone else has set up for me to accomplish in the times that they laid down for me. Or maybe it's because, like a lot of other people, I'm a people pleaser by nature. I hate to say no. I also know that sometimes I say yes just a little bit too fast. Too often I don't take the time to fully understand the task and what it requires. I don't ask myself if I have the tools and the talents and the skills required and ready to use those tools to do the job right. I guess you could say that I may not ask myself, am I up to the job? I also think that we have an almost natural inclination to overthink issues and make them more complicated and daunting than they really are. And that often results in making a mountain out of a molehill. Often when I'm confronted with the enormity or complexity of a task, I immediately feel overwhelmed and inadequate. On the other hand, there are those who habitually underestimate the magnitude of tasks and plunge headfirst without blinking into the darkness. At one time in my career, I was associated with a group of consultants who specialized in process management. In this case, their area of expertise was financial transaction process management. They counted checks. Their task was to untie the customer's Gordian knot. Their approach was linear and incremental. They studied the process and its objectives, and then they decomposed the whole process down into individual and discrete tasks. They methodically went from A to B to C, but not before understanding everything there was to know about A and B and C. They understood problems and developed appropriate solutions at each stage of the process before going on to the next. Not only did they untie the Gordian knot, they rebuilt the process and actually delivered a newly simplified, better than new process back to the client. There are a lot of other examples of small bites. Grant Wacker's biography of the great evangelist Billy Graham is titled One Soul at a Time. And if you recall watching the Reverend Billy Graham on TV, he beckoned people to come to the altar and receive God and Jesus Christ into their lives one soul at a time. He didn't invite the whole crowd. Just come down. Each one of you, come to the front. On a more romantic note, we can remember Elizabeth Barrett Browning's poem. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. And that's what she did. She listed them one by one by one by one by one. If she hadn't done this, it would have been a very short poem. And in homage to all the computer nerds out there, let us remember that the world of information technology is measured in large part in gigabytes, megabytes, kilobytes, small bytes. My favorite poem, Mary Oliver, and my favorite poet, Mary Oliver, my favorite poem, The Messenger. The first line is, my job is loving the world. That job is noble and as worthy as it is best done one person at a time, one soul at a time. Because I'm convinced it's very, very difficult to wrap your arms around the whole world at once. Lao Tzu, the Asian philosopher, wisely said that a journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. You can't journey for 1,000 miles unless you take that first step. On a serious, more serious note, let's look at COVID-19. Doctors and nurses and technical medical support staffs are treating COVID-19 one soul, one patient at a time. They're devoting themselves to this task, helping one person at a time, often at great danger to themselves and great cost to themselves and their families. The Bible tells us about Jesus and the crowds and the multitudes that were so important to his mission. But if we look at his teaching, in particular his use of parables, he chose to focus on individuals to illustrate his message. Think about the Good Samaritan. And another spiritual leader, the Buddha, echoed Jesus' approach. And I look out here with these candles. The Buddha said that thousands of candles can be lighted with one candle. You gotta start with one candle. You can't light 1,000 candles all at once. Begin with one. There's another part of this that the Buddha said that the life of the single candle will not be disturbed. But in Jesus' life, that wasn't the case. However, one person did say, "Let him go." But the multitudes prevailed. Closely related to this idea and benefits of taking and savoring small bites is the notion of savoring small pleasures and celebrating small victories. And I go back to our scripture this morning, where he said, "I became far greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all of this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing, but everything proved to be meaningless. A chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun." And that's why I think small pleasures are so important. A number of years ago, Gloria and I went up to Hartford to the Elizabeth Park Rose Festival. I don't know if any of you folks have done that, but it's really magnificent. Roses and roses and roses of all colors and all sizes. But frankly, being there, it very quickly became overwhelming. And it wasn't until we went into one particular location where the folks were judging the magnificence of the roses one by one. You could look at an individual rose and study it and see how intricate and how wonderful it was. And you knew that somehow that God had made that rose. Last week I was meeting somebody in their office, and in the middle of what I thought was a delightful conversation, it was witty, it was meaningful, it was educated and purposeful, I suddenly realized that I had lost the attention of my host. My host was in fact looking out the window at a chipmunk. I thought, "Were you serious? How dare he take the time out of this fantastic conversation to have a look at a chipmunk?" He was denying himself the wit and wisdom of our conversation. But I too do like chipmunks. I think they're cute. I love to look at them scurrying about. They've always got a purpose. They're always going to do something. They never sit idly by. For many of us, even recognizing small pleasures, let alone savoring them, requires intentionality. Recognizing small pleasures is not an accident. It's a deliberate act. We have to be aware, and awareness is not accidental. There's no such thing, in my opinion, of accidental awareness. Our challenge is to be open-minded and fully aware in order to recognize what we see in our surroundings. I also think you have to be a little curious to do that. Before I go much further, I want to talk about some of my favorite simple pleasures. You know, I think walking on a beach, I don't care whether it's summer, spring, fall, or winter, walking on a beach has its own comfort. Or in my case, I love walking on the trails at Lake Mohegan with my son and my grandson. Meaningful, it's togetherness, it's family. Small pleasure, a hug, just a simple hug, and a kiss from my great-granddaughter, Rosalie. A hand to hold in sorrow, and that works both ways, giving and taking. A call or a letter, just by surprise from an old friend. Haven't talked to you in years. How have you been? A hug from somebody when you least expected it. A surprise. Words of encouragement when you're feeling blue. You know, I could go on and on and on, because when I think about it, I have an abundance of simple pleasures that I can enjoy every day. And my hope is that you folks too have simple pleasures that you enjoy. but please don't think about them now, because I have pages more to read. You know, simple pleasures may be simple, but in the long run, simple pleasures can be treasures. They can be very, very important to us. We have to be aware to recognize them. Obviously, I've been thinking about simplicity a lot lately, and I've been thinking about the battle with COVID-19 and that virus, and the new iterations of this, and the complications and the cost, the desperate cost of this. There's nothing simple about COVID-19. It's hard, it's almost impossible, to think about any kind of pleasure associated with when a loved one or an associate is in such jeopardy. The idea of folks dying alone without their families is just so sad. I've been thinking about the barriers that stand in front of us and stand in our way as we think about savoring small pleasures. We have far too many things in our lives that encumber us, discourage us, and we don't even realize it half the time. We spend energy trying to accomplish double the tasks in half the time. And at the end of the day, we find out that we're so exhausted, but we're so wired, we can't go to sleep. We, and I hope you notice I said we, fill our closets and our storage bins with things we probably don't even remember that we had. We have things that we haven't looked at in 6 months. Oh, there's a good side of this, because sometimes that's a new discovery. Aha, I forgot that one. Or you could say that this is a pitch for the carousel. Clean your closets, folks. Bring it to the carousel. Do a good deed. Well, I'm not going to say that, because that's not the time or the place. Anyway, we work and we work and we work and we worry about so many things. And these days, there seems to be so much to worry about. Unfortunately, we're often too influenced by fame and fortune. Our fortune and their fortune. We may well suffer from a dispiriting global malady, a disproportionate concentration of wealth among the few, and another world dominated by hunger and malnutrition and poverty. Us and them, theirs and ours. Too often, I think our guiding light these days seems to be consumerism and materialism. And in Matthew chapter 6, verse 24, Jesus reminds us that no one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You can't serve both God and money. So take a deep breath, folks. In a few days, 2021 will be history, and we all know we can't rewrite history. We can't rewrite it to suit our own desires, and we can't rewrite it to change the outcome. 2022 is on the horizon. And right now, 2022 is still a blank page. And each of us has the opportunity to fill that page with scribbles and doodles. Or if we want to, we can think of where we want to be at the end of 2022 and how we're planning to get there. I hope we do this by taking small bites, savoring small measures and small pleasures. By beginning our journey wherever we choose to go, I hope we do it one step at a time. Finally, Mary Oliver, my favorite poet. I don't know why I can't get that straight. She always has the ability to put into words things that I can't articulate. So I'm going to close this morning with her poem, aptly labeled, Don't Hesitate. If you suddenly experience unexpected joy, feel joy, don't hesitate, give in to it. There are plenty of lives and whole towns destroyed or about to be. We are not wise, and not very often are we kind. And much can never be redeemed. Still, life has some possibility left. Perhaps this is its way of fighting back, that sometimes some things happen better than all the riches or power in the world. It could be anything, but very likely you notice it in the instance where love begins. Anyway, that's often the case. Anyway, whatever it is, don't be afraid of its plenty. Joy is not made to be a crumb. Amen. And I hope each and every one of you has a blessed Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.